The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot, and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think that we need to rethink and decriminalize our
to the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
We love you.
How do we look there?
Looks good. I'm going to just move it a tiny bit more so that you don't go out of the picture.
Okay.
Yeah, that's good.
Good day, tokers and tokettes. Radical Russ here at the West Palm Beach home of Robert Platschon. Robert, thanks for having us here.
It's a joy and a pleasure. You've entertained me many times, and it's a pleasure to have you here in Florida now.
Oh, it's been an amazing trip. We visited so many amazing people, and of course, we had to put you on the list. And last time I saw you, we were, somewhere on the West Coast, I imagine, and you were working, getting your books sold, and the Square Grouper had just come out. Let's give people an update on what's been happening with Robert Platschon since then. I understand new probation officer, travel restrictions. It's been kind of an ordeal.
A little over a year ago when I came back from the Patients Out of Time conference.
That was it, yeah.
In Arizona. My parole officer, who was a really decent guy, had let me travel for 4 years. He understood that in order to do book signings and speaking engagements and work for legalization, that I had to travel, and he had no problem with it. He got very ill and went out on leave. And when I came back from Arizona, I get a call from a guy by the name of Scott Kirsch, and he said, "I'm your new parole officer." Now, my old parole officer had already gotten me early release from regular parole, and I started something called special parole, which is like secret parole.
Double secret
special parole. And he had told me, he said, "Don't worry about that. I'll get you released from that as soon as possible. You've earned it, and we have no worries about you." This new parole officer announces himself, and he says, "I'll be there to see you tomorrow." He shows up at my house, and the first thing he says is, "Cancel all travel arrangements." And I said, "I can't make a living if I can't travel." I said, "Book signings and speaking engagements are my total living. I was in prison for 30 years, and I get very little Social Security." I said, "I can't make it without that." And he said, "Just cancel all travel arrangements." And then he had a UA bottle. And he said, "Fill this." And I'd been treating about six skin cancers with cannabis oil. Mm-hmm. And my parole officer, the original one, knew about it and had no problem with it. So the new parole officer accuses me of traveling without permission, which I never did. And I said, "Well, call Mr. Gagliardi and he'll confirm." that I had permission to go to Arizona. He was talking about the Arizona trip. I said, furthermore, the paperwork is in the file. He said, yeah, but I don't see any approvals on it. I said, you'll find 50 travel requests there, not one of which has a written approval. Why pick on that one? He said, I think you traveled without Gagliardi's knowledge. I said, call him, you'll find out. He said, no, that's not going to happen. I said, and you might as well know that UA is going to come back dirty, and it's because I've been treating cancers with cannabis oil. I've got a medical certificate from California, and I've got a doctor here who's verifying it. He said, it's irrelevant, you're not allowed to, you're on probation, which of course I knew, but my original parole officer was a human being. In any case, as of early last May, I haven't been able to travel. I haven't been able to leave South Florida. I made one trip to Tallahassee in order to lobby for our Kathy Jordan medical marijuana bill, but in order to do that, I had to have a state senator go to bat for me in Washington with the parole commission. And then, of course, recently, you know, I took my silver tour, took over 100 seniors to Washington to lobby the government to stop enforcing the federal marijuana laws in states that have legal medical or have legalized or even decriminalized. And that may be bearing fruit now, because what Eric Holder's proposing, and what he's going to talk about in his speech at the Bar Association in Chicago, is taking the federal government out of enforcement where it involves patients or minor offenders, small-time growers. So I think maybe they paid attention when they saw all those seniors show up at Congress and demand that the federal government not interfere in legal states.
Well, this probation officer, it sounds as if his attitude is, you know, you did 29 years for a marijuana crime. How can we let you go try to legalize marijuana? And is there any appeals process to this? Can you go around this guy? What can we do?
You can go around him. The appeals process is automatic, and that is automatically denied.
Okay.
And as funny as this sounds, that's actually part of their code of federal regulations, that they will automatically deny appeals. So I went through that when they restricted my travel.
Uh-huh.
And my attorney, who had stuck with me the whole time I was in prison and hasn't been paid in 30 years, filed in court along with some attorneys from Normal. But it did no good because the parole board can do no wrong. But just like my trips to Tallahassee and Washington, any congressman who will speak to the parole commission, who will write or call the chairman of the parole commission, Isaac Fullwood Jr. in Washington, D.C., could have me released now from special parole. After you've done 2 years, you're eligible for early release. Almost everybody gets early release unless they've gotten in trouble. But my parole officer here has made it clear that he would never recommend that. He seems to have a thing for drug offenders.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm his, quote, high profile case.
Right.
And I think he has career ambitions that he can ride this high-profile case to promotions or raises or something. But he's definitely got a personal agenda, and he won't help me, no matter what.
Well, let's talk about the Silver Tour. You mentioned going to Washington, D.C., and you mentioned, you know, getting seniors to lobby for this. And of course, we're here in Florida, where there's a huge senior population. And you've also put out Should Grandma Smoke Pot, the infomercial. What has been the progress on those items?
In Florida, we've got a petition, and it's got sufficient backing for the first time. from a big law firm, Morgan & Morgan. They've got to collect 700,000 valid voter signatures to get it on the ballot. It probably has better than a 50-50 chance for the first time. They took over an organization called PUFM that's been working a petition for 4 years, and I was one of the first petitioners. I've spent hundreds of hours out in the Florida sun getting people to sign. And in 3 years, we were only able to get about 35 or 40,000 valid signatures. With financing and a professional polling organization running this new petition, they're well over 50,000 in the first 3 weeks.
Wow.
So it's looking good. Plus, 3 years ago, I went and addressed the legislators, the state legislators, when they met in West Palm Beach. And I pitched them on medical marijuana, our senior population and their need, plus the economic benefits to Florida. This is the most desirable destination in America, maybe in the world. We've got more to do here, better weather, more great hotel rooms, more facilities, the best food on earth from all over the world. A lot of people think it's like going abroad when they come to Florida. I mean, this is an incredibly great multicultural area. The arts here are maybe the best, surpassing New York. And I said, look, we're missing out on all of this great cannabis tourism. And we're losing our college students to Colorado and Washington and California and Oregon. I said, it just makes economic sense. And the 16 legislators who were in front of me all had their head down like this. They wouldn't even look at me. Once they heard the word marijuana and they saw me hold up a can, one of Irv Rosenfeld's cans, I've got one over there, by the way, they didn't want any parts of it. But one legislator who was a representative at the time, Jeff Clemens, was intrigued, and his aide stopped me as I was going out the door, and we worked together, and the result was a bill for medical marijuana. It was actually to change the state charter so that it would allow for medical marijuana. It didn't go anywhere. He brought it up again the next year. He had some co-signers and a companion bill in the Senate, and it at least went into committee. It never got out of committee because the Republicans wouldn't allow it to even be discussed. This past year, it was filed again. Jeff's a senator now, and he filed it as the Kathy Jordan medical marijuana bill. You know, Kathy came to Florida, I think, 27 years ago to get enough opiates to commit suicide, because she has the most virulent form of ALS, and generally the people don't survive more than a couple of months, and it's an agonizing time. And she not only survived once she was introduced to cannabis, but she thrived in many ways. Kathy's a fabulous person, and she, even though she's now in a wheelchair, it's 27 years later and she's still alive, she has dedicated herself to visiting legislators and just begging to make this medical marijuana available to everybody in the state. So many people need it. This state has one of the largest senior populations in the world. The average senior here is on at least a dozen medications, all of which are toxic, many of which are to counteract the effects of the other half a dozen. And Kathy's been a fabulous spokesman for us.
Yes.
So the bill was named after her, went into committee, plenty of co-signers this time, but the Republicans blocked it. Now that we have the petition that appears that it could succeed, I think the legislators will take a different approach when the bill is put in again in the next legislature, because they will lose the option of doing it themselves if the petition's successful. Mm-hmm. So the bill drives the petition drives the bill, and for the first time we've got a really decent chance of getting something done in what's been the toughest state in the country. You know, the southern part of the state has been in favor for a long time, but central and northern Florida, you might as well be in, well, you are in the heart of Dixie. Mm-hmm. And the politicians just would fight tooth and nail. It's beginning to change. When I was in Tallahassee, I actually had some of the Republican politicians tell me they might consider backing legalization before medical.
Really?
Yeah. Well, the reason being, the Florida Medical Association does not back medical marijuana. Why, I don't know. Maybe because we've neglected them. We haven't lobbied them hard enough. That's very possible, because I didn't know they were against it. But the Republican lawmakers, who are the majority and control all the committees, say that without their backing, they won't back a medical bill. But they understand the need and the practical value of legalization. And so it's strange, but they vote for legalization before they vote for medical.
Wouldn't that be something if Florida was the first state to go straight to legalization and bypass medical? That would be amazing.
It would be, and is highly unlikely. What really bothered me is these people who said that had absolutely no compassion for people like Kathy, for people with autistic children, for people who needed to treat epilepsy, for seniors who needed for things like Crohn's, MS, MD. I mean, it's often a matter of life or death, and certainly a matter of the quality of life. It makes such a big difference. And to see these politicians who have absolutely zero compassion for these people just eats me up alive. And that's one of the reasons I made Grandma. I wanted to educate people as to the benefits of cannabis. And if you saw Sanjay last night,
yes,
if you take out the Charlotte Webb story, so much of what he showed came from Should Grandma Smoke Pot?
Right, the Israeli.
I can't help thinking that his producer or he saw it, because in the beginning of the show, when they talk about why cannabis is illegal, it's exactly like it is in my show. Mm-hmm. And my show's been out there for a year. The Israeli they show smoking is the one that I show close-ups of in our show. And the guy smoking from a vape in the hospital. Mm-hmm. In Grandma, we go a step further, and you see a man in a hospital bed being fed from a vaporizer through his tracheotomy. Mm. And that, of course, is very dramatic. Most of what was in that show is what we produced over a year ago. And I think now that someone like Sanjay Gupta has done a 180, which is better than somebody who was for it to begin with.
Right.
Because you know it's based on current research. Now that he's done a 180, and that show's going to be seen over and over again, CNN's going to play that to death, you know it.
Yeah.
So when people see Grandma, they're going to relate it to what they saw. Mm-hmm. And the endorsement of Sanjay Gupta, because there's nothing in our show that he doesn't endorse. And so it'll reinforce it and reinforce it. And of course in our show, we can put up a crawl that will tell them where to get a petition to sign, or how to contact a congressman or a legislator. And our show is not a political show. It doesn't tell you to do this. It says, if you're mature enough, if you think you have the information, And if you'd like to see changes in your state, here's what you can do. So we don't go on the air as a political show, but simply as an educational and an issue show. And it's supported by donors. We don't have any corporate support. I buy the time just like I used to for my infomercials. You know, I was making infomercials before they were even called infomercials, mm-hmm. before Ron Popeil or Billy Mays. And I can buy half hours for a fraction of what an ad agency would pay for that same time. I can get overnights, late nights, sometimes $25, $50 each.
Wow.
I can get early morning, 11 o'clock at night, sometimes for $100 to $200 each, depending on the size of the market. I mean, you're not going to get that in L.A., but in West Palm Beach, you can, and this is a good-sized market. We've been in good-sized cities in Texas, Arkansas, Oregon. We were on in Eugene, Oregon, all times of the day and afternoon, and at an average of $100 for a half hour. And you reach thousands of people each time the show goes on. What's important is that it's repeated every day for a couple of months. That's the lesson from the infomercial business. It's great when a network does a show about weed and it's positive, but it's on once, maybe a repeat in the summertime, and it's gone. With Grandma, we run it like an infomercial, and we know it takes three viewings for the average viewer to go take action. It used to be it took three viewings to get them to buy a Ginzu knife.
Right.
Now, I figure it's three viewings to pick up the phone and call a congressman, or go to your congressman's office, or write a letter to a congressman and say, we want this. It works. I've gotten thousands of emails from people saying, thank you for running this show. What we don't have is thousands of supporters to pay for those inexpensive TV shows. And it's the most effective way to reach a lot of people and have an effect.
Do you ever have a market, a TV market, a station, a manager that rejects it because of content, or have they always been good about going on?
It's about a 50-50.
Yeah.
No, it's never been rejected for content.
Okay.
Even the ones that rejected like the show.
Oh.
But it's been rejected for subject matter. Difficult time finding stations in northern Florida who'll run it. Surprisingly, the first large group of TV stations that approved it across the board was Hearst Broadcasting. And
there's some irony.
It was their head counsel who had to approve it. Because we went to a Hearst station, they passed it up to the national manager, who says, no, it's got to go through legal, and it took weeks. And then he came back and said, this is the finest issue show, the classiest issue show I have ever seen. You're welcome to come on all our stations. And I said, well, what about the fact that it tells you right in our show that Hearst was a major player in having marijuana made illegal and in getting prohibition? And they said, that's fine. As long as you tell the truth, not a problem. Just blur out that picture of John Wayne that's in the background. We don't want his family to sue us. That was their only problem with the show. And I think now that the CNN special's been on, that a lot of stations who said no because they were afraid of reaction will say just the opposite. Here's another strange irony. The station we've had the best results on, the most people donate to keep it on the air, and the most thank you emails, is a station in Tampa. Now, Tampa, Florida is the home of DARE.
Right.
Partnership for Drug-Free America. And every other anti-organization. And, of course, they all belong to the Sembler family, or Calvina Faye. those are the evil doers behind those organizations. And you'd think Tampa would be the hardest place to get on TV because they can put a lot of pressure on or have the least positive reaction, but it's just the opposite. Hmm. And when we ran out of funds, I took a 3-month contract in Tampa to run every day, and it was very inexpensive. When we ran out of funds after 2 months and there wasn't enough coming in to keep it on the air, I got a call from the national rep, and she said, Bobby, she said, the minute that show went on the air, we started getting great comments. She said, the station's gotten so much good mail. Please, if you can find a way, keep that show on the air because it's building an audience for our station, when normally infomercials kill the audience. Mm-hmm. I mean, at least 50% leave as soon as an infomercial goes on. She said, with your show, we're actually building up our audience for our next regular broadcast show.
Wow.
It's just been strange. It's very hard to get on in the South. We've been on in Arkansas and Mississippi, and it was just recently a Mississippi station that I had to cancel out because Weed Maps withdrew their support. They had pledged a pretty good sum on a monthly basis to run Grandma in as many cities as possible. That, combined with our donors, I thought we were off and running. And we have a new version of Grandma with some pretty good improvements and more of Irv Rosenfeld on screen with his story. But after 2 weeks on the air in Mississippi and Evansville, Indiana, another place that really needs some education, I had to cancel a 3-month contract because Weed Maps disappeared on us, and I was really counting on that. When we were in Washington and their TV guy, Gil, was down putting together a show, he assured me that there would be long-term, ongoing, monthly support. And then they just, I never heard from him again or Weed Maps. And it's a shame. They helped us pay for that big reception in Washington. They were very good. It was a big, I mean, they kicked in $5,000. And I know that's not a lot to them, but it was sure a lot to the Silver Tour, and we did a lot with it. And it's just regrettable we've got no corporate sponsors. And I have to fight every day to get enough money to buy some TV once I can accumulate a little kitty.
Yeah, folks, you can get Grandma on your TV station, no matter where you're at. You're in Ohio, you're in Tennessee, you're in freaking North Dakota. It doesn't matter. TheSilverTour.org, and we can put this on. We can put this on in your neighborhood, in your local station. We ought to do that.
I'm working with a group in Tennessee who'd like to get it on, and that's one of the places I'm having a hard time getting station approval. Hopefully that can change after this CNN special. But we're looking at Arkansas. Arkansas has legalization petition going now that will get on the ballot. You know, Arkansas tried to pass medical last year and only missed by 1%. Mm-hmm. And I was able to get on TV with Grandma in Arkansas, and I know that was a big boost. That was one of the reasons they came so close. And I've got a couple stations in Arkansas, and I really want to put Grandma on to help them pass legalization. Now that would be a small miracle.
Yeah.
In the middle of the South, to get Grandma to get legalization in Arkansas. But it's a real attainable goal.
Mm-hmm.
And a few $1,000s could make the difference between it passing and it not passing.
Absolutely. TheSilverTour.org. Now,
donate.
Of course, people know you also from your book, Black Tuna Diaries, and I understand you're working on another book, which I'm real excited about because I've followed, you know, my job. I follow these people and I rant against them and I kind of pay attention to their tactics and strategies. It sounds like you're going to blow the lid off of this with your new book coming up.
No one has ever put it in book form or permanent form and traced the money trail of the people who spend so much time and money fighting against legalization. Organizations like DARE, Partnership for Drug-Free America, and SOS, mm-hmm. which is the same people. Almost all of it are Mel and Betty Semler and Calvina Fay. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a woman in New Jersey who has an organization who's fighting against the existing medical marijuana, and she's made a fortune in grants and sponsorship from drug companies and private prison organizations. It's private prisons today more than any of the others of the corporations mm-hmm. that are supporting anti-legalization. The reason being, they all make a tremendous amount of their profit from their factories. They're virtually slave factories. They say they don't force anybody to work in them, but in fact they do. Because if you don't work in them, you'll find your bed is next to a toilet used by 300 or 400 people in a dormitory. And that's only the beginning. You'll lose your commissary privileges. They will force you into that factory. The best workers are marijuana offenders. They're docile. They just want to do their time, not get in trouble, and go home. The serious criminals, the violent criminals, you know, the private prisons, ship them back to the state or the feds. They don't want those people. They're too expensive. So we're filling private prisons with drug offenders, mostly small-time drug offenders. And hopefully this new proposal by Eric Holder, which isn't a proposal, it's a presidential decree, will stop a lot of that. Private prisons are the shame of our nation. How can you make money from locking people up? You know, almost all of our drug laws in the past 10 years were actually written by the private prison corporations and then enabled through ALEC, mm-hmm. A-L-E-C.
American Legislative Education Council, something like that.
Yeah.
Executive Council.
And it's a partnership of business and government. And they've taken those laws that were written by private prison corporations, doubling and tripling prison time for low-end drug offenders, and they've gone right into law. They're passed without a squeak because the private prison corporations today are just huge campaign donors. And they donate millions and millions of dollars to those politicians. And so, yeah, they just check off and the bills get passed. I'd like to see that change. And it's one of the things we work so hard for. Where were we?
Greed and evil.
Greed and evil. I traced the money trail. And what really blew my mind was the grants that these organizations are getting from the government, from our tax dollars, and then a very identifiable percentage of it is used to bribe the politicians who run the grant programs. When I say bribe, I mean, of course, campaign contributions. And they don't do it directly, they do it through lobbying organizations. But I've identified the lobbying organizations. I've identified the amounts. I've shown how it correlates with the grants, aside from all the corporate money that these people get, and the huge salaries they pay themselves. It's a business, and one that they're going to fight tooth and nail to maintain, and to the detriment of the country, to the detriment of sick people, to the detriment of hundreds of thousands of people who have had their lives destroyed by being thrown in prison for something that's not a crime against person or property or against the country.
did you see these changes in how they run prisons and the mentality behind them turning to profit during your time? Because you were until, what, 2008.
The end of 2008. I saw huge changes. After I was in for 4 years, the Bureau of Prisons announced that their mission was no longer going to be rehabilitation. They actually announced that their mission was now custody and educational programs just began disappearing. And the really valuable ones, the trade educations, air conditioning, small engine repair, electronics, they all disappeared. They had just started teaching computer sciences. Gone. They didn't want anybody to learn how to use a computer. Now, somebody coming out of jail who can't use a computer is DOA. And that's also when they began forcing people into the factories. Before that, it really was voluntary. I went in and started working in the factory after I'd been in a year so that I could send home some child support. In federal prison, I believe the highest pay is about 42 cents an hour. You start at it 10 cents an hour and work your way up. I think I was up to about 30 or 35 cents an hour, which is just under super grade. That hasn't changed in about 40 years. They haven't had one raise in federal prison. In fact, they kept putting in apprenticeships at 5 cents an hour, then pre-apprenticeships at 0 cents an hour. But my motive was to be able to earn my own commissary money and maybe have $100-$150 to send to take care of my family, whatever good it could do to help. And with enough overtime, I used to work a lot of overtime, I could do that. And then they announced a program where if you had a fine, they would deduct, they would take your pay and deduct it from your fine. And I have a fine, or had a fine, of about $500,000. So I knew I would never again be able to earn a cent for commissary or be able to send any money home. And they then gave preference to all the jobs and all the promotions to people with fines.
Mm-hmm.
Now they've got all this money coming in, but none going out. And there wasn't much going out for pay to begin with. When I was in prison, the charter of Unicor, which is Federal Prison Industries, would not allow them to produce anything that competed with private business and private industry. And that had been the case for a long time. So they made mattress covers and mail bags.
The book is called Greed and Evil, and when can we expect to see it?
I hope to have it done and in ready to ship by Christmas.
Oh, good.
In time for Christmas. I may do a crowdfunding on GoFundMe in order to be able to sit home and write the book. It's going to take an awful lot of research. I've got a month's worth of research in, and it's going to take at least that much more and some help from some people who are researching for me. The actual writing time comes easy to me. I can write it in about a month and take a second month to rewrite it and make it decent. And then I have to decide whether to take it to a publisher or self-publish. My instinct is to self-publish. you don't get a lot of money from publishers for that type of book, and then the residuals are very small. My book, Black Tuna Diaries, is now in the fourth printing. And for a self-published book, it's probably one of the biggest sellers there's ever been. Not lately, not the last couple of months.
You can't go to the events, right.
Because I can't get to the events. And any author will tell you, when you can appear at a bookstore or a book signing or a large event, you sell more books than a bookstore would sell in a year. You do more in a day. That's always been my mainstay. And because I've spent so much time working with the Silver Tour for the past year, I've spent virtually no time promoting the book. So book sales have just piddled along. But even so, I will probably do a funding on GoFundMe so that I can buy groceries and gas while I finish the book. And then possibly have money to self-publish. I think the book will be a sensational hit because of the information that's in there and the revelations that just haven't been written about before. Nobody's exposed private prisons and the anti-drug organizations for what they really are, which is huge money generators and huge campaign generators for the politicians. And if it weren't for them, I think we'd have had legalization quite a while ago.
Mm-hmm. Now, we've kind of referenced it a couple of times already in discussions, and you were talking about the Florida medical people not being behind, the Florida medical board not behind medical marijuana. But last night, Dr. Sanjay Gupta on CNN premiered his Weed documentary that did a great job of showing the medical benefits of cannabis and even publicly apologized for what he called systematically misleading the people on the medical benefits. Do you think this CNN special is going to have a positive effect on those Florida medical board people or Florida voters in general?
Florida voters, undoubtedly. He's well respected. He's got a huge following. He's a big star on CNN. And unlike some of the other TV doctors, he's a real practicing doctor. He does surgery, he travels around the world treating people. He's got an excellent reputation as an academic. And I believe that more than anyone else, he has the confidence of the public and the exposure. I mean, there are other doctors who have great integrity and great reputations, but you don't get to see or hear them very often. With Sanjay Gupta, he's on every day, and he does his own program every week. This special will be shown, I'm sure, dozens and dozens of times, and it can't help but have an effect. I think they did a really excellent job. They had to show both sides of the story. And it's a shame that the lady from the NIDA,
Volkoff,
she lied through her teeth and said that they're not holding back research and that someone who wants to research can go to some other committee to get permission. And it's just not true. They have to go through the NIDA and the DEA to get permission to get the material from the University of Mississippi, which is the only legal marijuana that they can run a research program with without losing all their government grants and all their government funding. And she just out and out lied about it and said they're not holding back on research. And then another cog in the wheel, another barrier has been the man who was on that show from the University of Mississippi who grows the medical marijuana.
El Soli.
Soli. Boy, did he lie through his teeth. First of all, he said marijuana used to be 1%. Well, that's almost hemp.
Yeah.
You couldn't get high on that if you had a ladder and a skyhook and an airplane. And he said that's what people would get a nice buzz from. And now he said we have marijuana that's 34% THC. I think he must have dreamed that one up, because to the best of my knowledge, the highest THC produced and verified, I think, was 28%. And that was grown for a contest and for a specific medical use, and you're not going to find much of that. Today, good marijuana is 12 to 16%, maybe as high as 17 or 18%. And it occurs to me that that's exactly what I was importing from Colombia back in the mid-70s, because we occasionally had it tested, and that's what it was. Mm-hmm. And the growers in Colombia used to have it tested, and it would be 14%, 16%, and the real good Santa Marta gold, 17, 18%. Mm-hmm. So, and of course, the Hawaiian, the Maui, the Thai stick, that was all way up there.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, this guy is trying to justify what he does by lying. And his reason, he has a monopoly. They've tried to get permission from the government to grow medical marijuana for research for several major universities, for several big state universities, several big commercial companies like Bob Melamed's company, and the government will not allow it. This guy fights tooth and nail to keep his monopoly. He's made a small fortune from being the only guy in the world that can legally grow marijuana in the U.S. and supply it for medical use. The stuff he supplies is, good Lord, God awful.
Not seen it.
I've seen Irv and I've seen LV, and smelled what they were smoking, and I know what worthless sweeping smell like.
Yeah.
Really bad weed. I mean, I can remember, and boy, that was it. And some of it's as much as 6 or 8 years old, 10 years old. And it's stems and sweepings, and they try to justify it by saying, well, it's rolled in a cigarette machine, and real fresh marijuana would be too sticky.
Uh-huh.
The machine wouldn't be able to roll
sure.
it. So this guy lied, but overall, the program was just excellent. Oh, one other big liar, the guy with the rehab clinic
First
in Colorado.
Uh-huh.
Guy looked like Lurch. What a lying SOB this guy was. He's saying, and today there's so many kids going into rehab. He says, I literally cried. Yeah, right. What he didn't tell you was that it was the courts that are filling up his rehab centers, for which he's making a fortune.
Mm-hmm.
By telling people it's rehab or prison. There is no rehab for marijuana because marijuana is not physically addicting. I heard a really great description the other day, or I read it somewhere on the web. Someone who had smoked for 30 years and decided to stop. He said, and I loved it. I smoked every day. He said, and I really missed it. He said, but I love cornflakes too. And if I gave them up, I'd miss them. He said, it's about the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But there are people who are making millions from these phony rehab centers that are being filled by the courts. And that's a shame. But you know what? I'd rather see somebody go into a rehab center than into a prison.
And that seems
as bad as that practice is.
Yeah, and that seems to be the diversion they're trying now, is instead of this pipeline to the private prisons and the factories, it's now a pipeline to the rehabs and the clinics.
Yeah, it's better than sending them to the prisons and prison factories. I think it's an interim step, which they have to do. the politicians are still afraid of radical change. They want to do it step by step. And you got to remember, I spent 30 years in prison. To me, any step is an important step. There are no bad steps. I don't care if it's a decrim for a township with 20 people. It's worth working for. Even though it doesn't change the law, it keeps people from being busted. Any medical bill to me is a huge step. And that doesn't mean I don't believe in legalization, because that's what has to happen. But I'm satisfied that that's a great step on the way, because look at Colorado. They had a really great, well-regulated marijuana, medical marijuana industry for 8 years. They shook out the bad characters. They got rid of the nuisance mom-and-pop storefronts, which really were a nuisance. I mean, I was in Denver, and I saw that there were way too many of them, and the newspapers and people were afraid of them. And the people who were left were the people who were operating according to regulation and running safe, attractive clinics. And because they had 8 years of good experience, they had no trouble passing legalization. So I believe in step by step, if that's the way it's got to be. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd like to see a change overnight. No more prohibition.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not going to happen. I'm a pragmatist, so I will work for any form of legalization that moves us forward. I saw everybody whine and cry up in Washington about the driving regulations that were passed along with legalization. Well, if that's what you have to pass in order to pass legalization, God bless you. Because the courts were already speaking about the lack of real scientific proof of impairment. And in states that had THC limits, and there were several at the time, the courts were tossing them out because they just didn't mean anything. And I felt that the people in Washington shouldn't be crying about it. Pass it, and then worry about changing the driving regulations. Mm-hmm. But it was so important to pass legalization there and in Colorado, and it's made a difference nationally. It's changed the dynamic nationally. There are states that are talking about doing it by legislation. Maine came this close. I forget what the opposition... Oh, the opposition was the dispensaries in Maine. So now they're going to put it in front of the voters. But they were ready to pass it in the legislature.
Yeah.
It should pass. I mean, how many voters are there in Maine? 8, 9, 10, whatever.
Oh, come on, our Maine listeners. We love you.
And if you live in Maine, you probably smoke anyway, just to get through the winter.
Stephen King said that it should be legalized in Maine. It would be a great cottage industry up there.
And Lord knows there are a few cottages. But there's a couple of other states that are talking about doing it legislatively or putting it on the ballot.
Well, you mentioned how Florida, the initiative acts as a leverage to get the legislature to want to work. We got a similar dynamic in Oregon where we're trying legalization initiative, and it's kind of pressuring our legislature to take up legalization as well.
Yeah, it's a shame it didn't pass last time. The fault was it didn't have support because they didn't have confidence in the people who were leading the initiative.
That's a big part.
Yeah, it is.
It's a big part.
And in a way, those same players may hurt it this time. I put Grandma on in Oregon, and the people with the initiative were supposed to pay the TV bill. I put it on in Eugene, and we ran for a month or more every day. It was very inexpensive. It was $100 a half hour, all different time slots. And Eugene was the only part of Oregon that had a large farm population, rural population, that didn't vote against. Mm-hmm. Portland voted for. I looked at the exit polls, but the only other major area that voted for was Eugene, and Eugene had a smaller urban population and a much larger rural population, and it was the rural populations that voted it down, but not in Eugene area. In that TV coverage area, the response was really good. So I know Grandma works. I mean, I can document it every place it's ever been shown. And I understand there's as many as four bills that are going to compete.
There's a constitutional amendment, a statutory initiative, a legislative bill. Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, and I'd like to get back on TV up there and help one or all of those. But this time I got to get a check up front.
Yeah.
Because I didn't get paid last time.
Yeah, we got to fix that.
Yeah, that emptied the Silver Tour kitty pretty good for a while. But I wanted to do it, and I wanted to support the Arkansas bill. Nobody backed that except our regular Silver Tour donors. But it did a lot of good to run in Arkansas, and now there's a lot of enthusiasm for legalization. And boy, would that be terrific.
That'd be amazing. Right in the buckle of the Bible Belt.
Yeah.
Folks, it's the silvertour.org, it's Black Tuna Diaries, the movie Square Grouper, the upcoming book Greed and Evil, Should Grandma Smoke Pot? We're going to have to get you a double-sized business card to fit all this stuff on it.
I have one.
See? I told you.
Yeah.
Robert Platshorn, you're an amazing man, and thank you so much for having us here. And before we wrap this up, any last words for our audience?
www.thesilvertour.org. You can donate. You can go to the Stash House and get a copy of Should Grandma Smoke Pot, a copy of Black Tuna Diaries, a Black Tuna Medallion, a Silver Tour pin. And it all goes to help the Silver Tour or help finish Greed and Evil. And it's such a joy to see you. You know, one of the worst things about not being allowed to travel, not being able to get out there and see my brothers and sisters, I miss you, because you and I have been friends since the day I got out of prison. Your friendship and other people in the movement means a lot to me. And it's been over a year since I've been able to go be with my friends and do the things we like to do together.
Yeah. We'll represent and be thinking of you at Hempfest for sure this weekend.
Yeah, please. It breaks my heart not to be at Hempfest this year. But my PO told me he will never allow me to travel to further legalization in the United States. So, find me a senator who will talk to the parole commission. Early
release.
Got it.
Representative Earl Blumenauer, you're getting a letter from me. Thank you, Bobby. Appreciate it so much. All right.
All right.
Yay.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. Take a seat,
you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.